Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And, Jim, the good news comes from the offices of the RNC and the DNC. This report from TheHill.com, it states, quote, the RNC has significantly more cash on hand than the Democratic National Committee. RNC had $12.3 million in cash on hand and no debt at the end of July, while the DNC had $4.1 million in cash on hand and nearly $18.5 million in debt. Last month, the RNC took in $5.9 million, spent $6.3. The DNC raised $3.9 and spent $5.4. The bottom line here is that while 2012 was clearly not a good cycle for Republicans, getting the financial house in order after the Michael Steele era was a major success for Reince Priebus, and hopefully if enough good candidates and good solid candidates are recruited, 2014 could be a much different story.
None of us, I think, are all that surprised to see an organization run by Democrats running up millions and millions in debt. There's a certain consistency there I guess we should admire. They practice what they preach, you know. I'm very curious about how a national committee can run up, as you said, was it $18 million in debt?
Yes.
Who are these people who are saying, sure, we'll sell you all that stuff, or, you know, here's a big loan, you know. I guess if you're a party and you know they think the DNC is good for it, I guess that's their vendor's decision. The interesting thing is that the fact that the DNC is able to run up massive debts and not, say, have their credit card canceled or you know, never seem to have any consequence for that kind of raises the question of whether it's really worth it for the RNC to work so hard to be debt-free other than to avoid the obvious chuckling about the idea of, oh, look at those Republicans with their high debts, et cetera, not practicing what they're preaching. Looking ahead to 2014, a functioning, financially secure RNC will be a big help. And so that's one thing that Reince Priebus, I think we can all agree on, is doing a much better job on than his predecessor. And a good, functioning, healthy organization will hopefully help the Republicans gain in the midterms. And oh, by the way, there's a fairly key gubernatorial race coming up in Virginia that a functioning RNC could be a big help in that one. And that was my attempt to segue to our next martini.
Excellent transition. Excellent transition to what is unfortunately the bad martini, and that is a new survey out of Quinnipiac. They have the Virginia governor's race 48% for Terry McAuliffe, 42% for Ken Cuccinelli. Cuccinelli, a rock-solid conservative here, and a lot of people seeing this as a bellwether of just how much staying power the Tea Party has in state and national elections. And Jim, there's a couple additional bad things here as you look through the numbers. First of all, the numbers seem to be a lot more solid. The last round of polls a few months ago, we saw folks in the low 40s, high 30s in terms of the polls. A lot of people not with their minds made up. Now, about 90% of the people seem to have their minds pretty much made up, either will not change or very unlikely to change. There's only about 10% on either side who would say they would consider changing their vote. It would appear, according to the analysis from Quinnipiac, this is their quote from their guy, voters care more about empathy than experience, which helps explain McAuliffe's lead. People on both sides of the aisle say Cuccinelli's more qualified, but people seem to think that McAuliffe understands them better. And of course, hanging over everything here is the donor scandal involving outgoing Governor Bob McDonnell, and Cuccinelli's had to answer for some of the gifts he's gotten from Johnny Williams as well. So all in all, not a good set of circumstances here.
This is pretty darn bad. And let me just observe that if Terry McAuliffe ends up winning the governorship because of a donor scandal, the universe may fold in within itself because of the irony. It may actually, you know, destroy the laws of time and space. We'll have to see if this is just a result Quinnipiac finds. Quinnipiac has not generally been one of those, you know, crazy left-wing pollsters. The Cuccinelli campaign is arguing that the sample has too many Democrats, and I guess we'll see how it shakes out, whether other polls find similar reactions. What's really kind of intriguing, though, is it basically says that the McAuliffe advertising gets Cuccinelli is working, basically saying that he's, you know, mean and he hates women. By the way, this is the guy who, like, founded a student organization fighting against sexual assault back when he was at the University of Virginia, who's actually got this wonderful life narrative that refutes all the war on women stuff, but basically they're trying to Todd Aikenize, and according to these polling results, seems to be pointing in that direction. The other thing is that none of the green tech stuff seems to be sticking to McAuliffe. And somebody had said to me, and I thought was a little too cynical, but they said, look, the entire Democratic base is made up of people who either don't know about Terry McAuliffe and his green tech, and the idea that this was a effort to kind of fleece investors and that stuff, or they're full of people who don't care because he's got a D after his name, he's their guy, and all that kind of stuff. And there's a, you know, that cynical interpretation has a little more evidence to support it starting this morning. We'll see if Cuccinelli can turn this around. You could argue that people aren't that tuned into it yet. But, you know, summer's almost over. Autumn is right around the corner. And this is not the result that Republicans wanted to see in Virginia.
Yeah, we're looking at about 100 days left in this campaign. And a couple of points here. First of all, this is totally anecdotal on my part, Jim. But as you watch TV in Virginia, doesn't it seem to you that McAuliffe and his allies have way more ads on TV than Ken Cuccinelli?
Well, Terry McAuliffe has roughly infinity financial dollars to work with. Terry McAuliffe is the most successful fundraiser in American history for political campaigns. We all kind of knew that McAuliffe was going to outspend Cuccinelli in this. I think the margin of it is pretty unnerving. To recite one of my a gripe you may hear from me over and over again is that, look, I keep hearing from the Republican grassroots, when a conservative runs, a conservative wins. We lose when we nominate these squishes who don't stand up for our vote. Well, look, Ken Cuccinelli is about as solid a conservative as you're going to get. And if you are not out there beating the bushes and doing everything you can for Ken Cuccinelli, now obviously it's all about talk. I mean, it's time to stop whining about Mitt Romney and John McCain and how the Republicans always nominate squishes. Ken Cuccinelli is the real deal for conservatives, and they're not opening up their wallets in the overwhelming numbers that he needs to keep pace with Terry McAuliffe. So I'm kind of irritated with the base demanding conservative nominees and then getting one in Virginia and then not putting their money where their mouth is, basically.
Well, if it's a resources issue, then that's one thing. I fear that he's repeating the mistake, if he does have the resources, of Mitt Romney and letting his opponent define him. And by the time he does have the resources in place to fire back, the image and the impression in the voters' minds is already set. You mentioned folks aren't paying attention. They also polled a little bit down ballot for the lieutenant governor and attorney general positions. In most of these cases, over 80% of the people know nothing about the candidates. Talk about low-info voters. That could be a real issue in some of those cases. And even in the governor's race, yet, it still doesn't seem like it's a big topic issue in Virginia. But I'm guessing as we get past Labor Day and so forth, that it will. And hopefully that'll be good for Cuccinelli somehow. Because in one of the things you notice here about Terry McAuliffe is that his numbers, fewer people know what they think about his experience. Fewer people know what they think about his empathy and all this stuff. People pretty much have made up their minds about Cuccinelli. So it's a matter of identifying McAuliffe, I think, now. The question is whether there's still time left to do that.
I can understand a voter saying that they don't know what to think of Terry McAuliffe's experience because he has none.
Good
other
point.
Other than a lot of fundraising. And we're heading up the DNC, you know. There was that Republican consultant who, by the way, I'm told was, you know, many folks in Virginia Republican politics said that the former Jim Gilmore chief of staff who endorsed McAuliffe yesterday basically was out of personal pique, and they pointed to lots of other outside factors. But when you're coming out and saying, I support Terry McAuliffe, former DNC chair, because he'll be better at working with the other party. He's about as you know, partisan a guy as you can get. And I'll be honest, I don't think Ken Cuccinelli is a John McCain maverick, I'm going to reach across the aisle type guy. If you want bipartisanship, this just isn't your year. You have two pretty darn partisan guys. One guy who's an absolute party loyalist, and one guy who I think is a down-the-line conservative, you know, consistent conservative, who's not going to find a lot of times he's going to be able to work across the aisle with liberal Democrats. I could rant about this race for a long time. But basically, Virginia Republicans, come on, snap, snap, step to it. You know, this is your wake-up call. Time to get to work.
Well, if that didn't have you depressed enough, let's move on to the crazy martini now. This from Reuters. Syrian activists accusing President Bashar al-Assad's forces of launching a gas attack that killed nearly 500 people on Wednesday in what would, if confirmed, be by far the worst reported use of chemical weapons in the two-year-old civil war. Jim, Sky News has the death total around 1,300, and who knows what it will be by the time folks hear this, and possibly later in the day or later in the week. But just in case Syria was feeling left out by all the coverage of Egypt, the 72 dolphins at the White House, and everything else, they're still having a hard time getting attention now when it seems like weapons of mass destruction being used here.
As the morning progresses, more and more folks seem to be recognizing this for the huge story that it is. For what it's worth, the Syrian regime of Bashar Assad says they didn't do it. There is a United Nations team that's already in Syria that's supposed to be investigating the use of chemical weapons. So we have a fairly simple test coming up in the next couple hours or days. If the Syrians allow the UN team to go to this spot where the chemical weapons were allegedly used, well, then they'll be able to figure out what happened. If the Syrian regime says, no, you can't go there, as Jeff Goldberg, the Bloomberg columnist, says, well, that's kind of an answer in and of itself. I suppose it's conceivably possible that this either wasn't chemical weapons and it was other, I don't know. There's something that has caused a lot of people to die in Syria. And at this point, the simplest explanation that it was indeed chemical weapons, the U.S. government has already confirmed the use of chemical weapons by Assad's regime on four other times, but this is a much bigger use of them, it seems. Goldberg closes his column today, and it's a really great, great point, which is, look, why would the Assad regime launch its biggest chemical attack on rebels and civilians precisely at the moment when a UN inspection team is parked in Damascus? The answer to that question is easy, because Assad believes that no one, not the UN, not President Obama, not other Western powers, not the Arab League, will do a darn thing to stop him. And there is a good chance he is correct. So we will see how this plays out in the coming days, if there is confirmation that indeed it was the Assad regime. But the next question is, if that occurred, you got to figure there's a whole bunch of folks in the Obama administration who are hoping that there's some sliver of doubt that they can hang this on. Because if it is, then they have to do something in Syria. And I think they see that they have no really good options in Syria and that they don't particularly like the opposition forces. And yet, you know, are we going to have another, Saddam gassing the Kurds moment in which a brutal dictator does something horrific and the world just kind of shrugs, or they offer a sternly worded UN resolution or something? It is conceivable that we're going to look at this and say this is when we entered a much more dangerous era in which it became clear that regimes could use chemical weapons within their own borders to suppress their own peoples as long as the rest of the world was busy and didn't want to deal with it. That the threshold for outrage in the world is a lot higher than anybody thought it was. So, happy Wednesday, everybody!
Yeah, happy Wednesday is probably the most ironic way to put it. Jim, have a great day anyway, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for listening today. And be sure to join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.